Welcome to 2819. I'm Sandra Dimes.
And I'm Brian Rombacher.
And you might notice that things look a little different on today's show. And we are practicing social distancing. So that's why.
You know, we have our virtual backgrounds turned on, trying to make it look as normal as we can for you. And we still have a great show.
Yeah. You know, we can't be hanging out with each other, but you know what? We're doing the best we can.
All right. But let's get into that rundown. We have a lot of familiar faces for today's show. We got Stuart McAllister from RZIM. We got Pat McGuire, who was an RTB visiting scholar. And we have philosopher and theologian Ken Samples.
And they're going to be discussing pretty relevant topics right now. So sacrificial love in a self-centered society. Is there geological evidence for a recent global flood? And very significant for these times, why would God allow COVID-19?
First up, we have Culture Talk. Sandra will talk with biochemist Buzzle Rana as they discuss science and faith amid a pandemic. Let's check that out.
Now it's time for Culture Talk, where we discuss culturally relevant topics that you can use to start conversations about your faith. I'm joined today with Dr. Fuzzle Rana, and we are going to be talking about science and faith in a pandemic. Thank you for joining us, Fuzz.
Sandra, thanks.
Well, you know, this is our social distancing episode, or one of them, hopefully not of many, but we want to talk about kind of this strange time that we're in and kind of how we look at science and faith in the midst of all of this. Something that has come up recently, we saw an article in the New York Times from Catherine Stewart. She wrote an op-ed pretty much just arguing that the Trump administration and their delayed response was really due to the influence of evangelical Christians, many of whom are anti-science. So whether her assertion, this was her assertion, but whether her assertion is valid or not, I think that that is the perception, that that is what Christians, evangelical Christians, believe. You know, they're anti-science, and that Christianity, from a non-Christian perspective, that Christianity gets in the way. It doesn't really do much. You even talked about this topic in a Facebook Live, and you're addressing that challenge of science, that science solves problems. And so then therefore, what good is Christianity, especially in a time like this? So I want to ask you, like, how would you respond to such a challenge?
Yeah, and this, by the way, is a pretty common challenge, whether we are in the midst of a pandemic or not. And the idea here is that, again, Christianity at best is on the sidelines watching science really accomplish things. And at worst, it's getting in the way, as you're pointing out. But to me, I think this is somewhat of a category error, because in a sense, science and the technology that comes from science is really supposed to study the world around us, and from that understanding, lead to technology that does improve the quality of people's lives. Whereas Christianity is not about solving problems so much, it's a religion that describes our relationship to God and our place in the cosmos as human beings. But I would actually say that Christianity has a lot to contribute in a time of a crisis like a pandemic, because out of Christianity flows a worldview, and out of that worldview flows a system of ethics that tells us, once we have an understanding of, let's say, the virus's biology, what do we do with that understanding? How do we develop medical responses to it? How do we develop public health responses? These are technologies, and they're not ethically neutral. And so the Christian worldview gives us an ethical framework that says humans have infinite worth and value, and out of that then shapes a response to the pandemic. So Christianity does have a lot to offer, but we shouldn't expect Christianity to solve technical problems. That's not what it's about.
Right. So you're talking about the category error and how science, and even what we're seeing with the pandemic and these technologies that are being created, that the purpose of those, it's to help people, but there isn't an ethic behind it, that it is just neutral. So then we have to get an ethic from somewhere. And when we think about the Christian perspective and getting our ethics from that and from the idea that all humans have value, then that's really what we would say Christianity does bring to the table, that it isn't on the sidelines for that purpose.
Yeah, and even though many people in the world are non-Christians, you can still see the Christian worldview and the value ascribed to human life that flows out of the Christian worldview really shaping the Western world and even other parts of the world in terms of, again, how we are responding to this pandemic. And not to be mean-spirited, but if you take a strictly naturalistic, atheistic, materialistic worldview where humans are the product of evolution and are no different than any other animal, then you could argue that maybe in that framework, the best response isn't to try to intervene to save lives. It's just to let the pandemic run its course in kind of a survival of the fittest mentality. But we are not responding that way because of the value we ascribe to human life. And this is what Christianity is bringing to the table in this time of crisis.
Right. And I think you're so right, because we see these, you know, the order to stay at home and to think about your neighbors. And that is a very Christian worldview and perspective of loving our neighbors and loving our neighbors by really staying away for now. So we talked about science and we talked about faith, and it made me think too of something that I saw pretty much at the beginning of this pandemic as it was hitting the US. And that was a tweet from director James Gunn. So he's the director of films like Guardians of the Galaxy. And we all kind of responded to that because he said, "I wish science and faith weren't so often pitted against each other or perceived as on opposite ends of the spectrum, as I personally could benefit from a fair amount of both right now. And I imagine I am likely not alone." And that just struck me that here we're in this time where we, for some of us, we're really looking for that, looking for this balance of science that helps us solve the problem and heal our bodies from this virus, but then also the faith of just getting through this really tough time. So you're in this unique position as both a biochemist and a Christian. How do you respond to questions about needing science and faith together and providing hope during a time that is also that hope that's grounded in sound reason?
Yeah, well, you know, to me, I think the exciting thing is that there is very compelling scientific evidence for God's existence and the reliability of Scripture, specifically the human origin accounts and the biblical perspective on human identity. And so out of that, I see that the message provided to us in Scripture is valid, is true, and it's a message of hope and purpose and destiny for every human being. And so, yes, science indeed will solve problems, and we can have hope that science will one day lead to, hopefully in the near future, some mitigation of the COVID-19 pandemic. But on the other hand, in the midst of that, our faith as Christians also gives us, again, a real sense of hope, purpose, and destiny that helps us to persevere through these challenging times. So again, these two areas don't need to be pitted against each other, and they shouldn't be pitted against each other, because the reason that we have to think that Christianity is true is also the basis for the hope that we have as Christians.
Yeah. Well, what would be a starting point for someone like James Gunn, who just feels like they want answers and they're humbly seeking those answers?
Well, you know, to me, I think the book that I would immediately recommend to people is the book by our friend and colleague, Hugh Ross, mm-hmm. Creator in the Cosmos, because in that book, he makes a very compelling point that the universe seems to be designed for a purpose, and that purpose seems to be the advent of humanity. And so once you start talking about purpose, and that purpose is intertwined with our existence as human beings, that to me is profoundly meaningful and profoundly encouraging and is completely consistent with the Christian message. So I would say Creator in the Cosmos is a great place to start.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for that, Fuzz. If you'd like to hear more on this topic, go to shop.reasons.org and check out the Creator in the Cosmos.
So we want to look at the idea of how do we deal with sacrificial love in a society that is so self-centered, narcissistic. When you think about it, you're out in culture and just your daily routines. Life is very pressed by the fact that it's all about me. The person cuts you off and someone's impatient in the Starbucks line. and you ask a colleague to do something, they're too busy, get back to you later. And you get this sense that life is lived constantly under the pressure of me, 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 it's all about me. We live to just be so self-absorbed. So agape love, which is Christian love incarnated, not an idea, not a concept, but the Spirit of God operating in us, His grace through us, is sacrificial love embodied and shown. One of the greatest illustrations I can think of on that subject was during the Second World War in the death camp, one of the horrors, most horrible places on planet Earth, where a priest stepped forward as a man was about to be executed and was desperate because he was a family man and gave his life. He asked for to be substituted. He was a healthy man with hope and was willing to lay down his life and die for another. A picture of the gospel, a picture of what we can do in everyday life. That's what it means in daily life, to take those moments and lay down your life. Maybe not be the first in life, not the one that pushes, not the impatient person, but choose to serve, to give, to love, and to bless. That's what it means to be free, Christ-like, in our culture at this time.
Now it's time for RTV 101, where we discuss practical questions to equip you to share your faith more effectively. And here to help me talk about a scientific perspective on Noah's flood is petroleum engineer Pat McGuire. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you here. And now I'm glad you're here to help us kind of look at a question of, what does the scientific evidence show? Was the Earth flooded, the entire planet covered with water just a few thousand years ago? So when we look at the evidence, the scientific evidence, does it show that the Earth was flooded with water about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago?
Well, the simple answer to that question is no, it does not. So the geologic record, it's very complicated, and it has many depositional environments. For example, one of my favorite environments is the Lisburn Limestone on the north coast of Alaska. And that was actually the target for the exploration wells that discovered the Prudhoe Bay field and got me to Alaska. So you've got an interval of 1,500 feet thick of critters that lived in shallow water, and we have all their fossils, so we know exactly what these critters were. And so century after century, over extremely long period of time, you've got 1,500 feet of limestone bodies. Essentially, it's a body count of little critters that lived in shallow water. One of my other favorite depositional systems is in Zion National Park in Utah. And we have thousands of feet. It's a gorgeous place if you've ever been there. But the dominant formation that forms these vertical cliffs is the Navajo sandstone. And the Navajo sandstone, it's like the Sahara Desert. You're looking at fossilized dunes individually that were hundreds of feet tall and formed a package of deep desert deposits that are several thousand feet thick. So clearly, both of these environments had nothing to do with a worldwide flood that covered everything from Mount Everest down.
So if the world had been covered with water, we would expect a lot of depositions from deep marine environments.
Yes, exactly.
But what we in fact see is a lot of variety.
Yes.
We see riverbed depositions. We see shallow water marine depositions. We see wind things that are formed as a result of the wind and sand. So there's a lot of variety. Everything's not deep level marine depositions. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And I want people to have a real appreciation for these limestone environments, because we don't necessarily know in our everyday life when we're walking around what makes something a limestone deposition, but that's a lot of time and a lot of pressure and animals dying and decaying. Help us have more of an appreciation of that.
Okay, if you've ever been to Hawaii or Bermuda or any of these places and gone snorkeling or diving and seen all the reefs, that's the kind of environment we're talking about, where corals, but a whole lot of other things, including some species that are now extinct, they lived, they died, and they just built up over time. but it was always in shallow water that the sunlight could get through, because that's how these animals live. They do photosynthesis as well as filter feed. So it's only in shallow water. And like at the Lisburn limestone in northern Alaska, the deposit's 1,500 feet thick. So that took a long time
to build up.
To build up that many bodies that then could be compressed and turned into limestone.
When I think about your area of expertise where you're drilling for oil, that also is a long process that takes death of animals and time and pressure and cooking. Help us appreciate that a little bit more.
Okay, what a geologist will look for to find an oil field is they first look for what's called a source rock, which means it's rock, usually kind of muddy stuff, that has a lot of microscopic, you know, little tiny, mostly microscopic organisms, phytoplankton and zooplankton. And these guys, if it gets more than about 150 degrees down there, which takes getting buried pretty deep, then this stuff will cook into oil. And that's what the geologist is looking for. Is there a source of oil? And then is there some kind of a sandstone or a limestone that has the pore spaces that can trap that oil? And when we get everything just right, then we can drill and hopefully find something down there that we can use.
So I'm thinking in your job, you have to have a general assumption that the Earth is old and that these geological formations are complex and multifaceted in order to find oil, to know where to tell these companies to drill. You can't do that in a global flood model.
No, we really can't. We have to have a pretty good idea, a working theory as to what the depositional system was. And then we can run measurements from the surface, usually with seismic, where we're setting off charges and listening to the echoes coming back, map out what's underground. And then we can spend millions to tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars to drill and find out, do we really have something or not? But we throw as much science at it as we can.
Well, thank you, Pat. We really appreciate you helping to break all that down for us. And I want to encourage you, if you'd like to hear more from Pat McGuire, just visit the Reasons to Believe YouTube channel. Now let's see who Jeff is talking to over in our Give and Take segment.
Hello, Jeff Zwering back with Give and Take, the segment of our show where we explore important scientific ideas and how they interact with the truth of Christianity. And today I'm joined by Ken Samples, and we're going to talk about COVID-19 and why would God allow something like this. Ken, it's good to have you on the show today.
Good to be with you, Jeff. Thanks.
So, I mean, anytime we have something where, like COVID-19, there's this virus out there, people are dying from it, there's a lot of economic hardship going along with this. Kind of the question is, how as Christians do we interact with COVID-19? And I know you've kind of split this up in terms of different kinds of evils that are out there. Can you kind of flesh out what are the different ways Christians look at evil?
Yeah, philosophically, Jeff, evil is kind of divided into two categories. This is kind of a standard philosophical classification, if you will. First of all, there's moral evil. We're all familiar with that. That's evil that flows from the will of an agency, an individual, a person, etc. So murder, rape, robbery, those would be examples of moral evil. Maybe the best example would be the Holocaust with its cataclysmic, the murdering of an entire race of people. On the other hand, we also, in philosophy, classify evil as natural evil. That's kind of something that rubs people a little wrong at times, but really what it means is natural disasters, hurricanes, tsunamis, earthquakes. That's where people are hurt or there is great damage caused by natural forces. And we put various things within those two particular categories.
So it seems like in these two classes, kind of the big distinction is there an agency behind it? Because with natural evil, you just kind of have things that are happening that cause harm to people. but it's really just in some sense operating by the laws of physics, whereas moral evil has a mind behind it or an intentionality about causing damage. Is that an adequate distinction?
I think that is fair. Now, of course, people would say when it comes to natural evil, if God is the creator of the world and if nature is created to operate in a particular way, why would God necessarily build a world that could potentially be dangerous? But I think your distinction is right. The most important element is in moral evil, there is a will being imposed. With natural evil, I mean, hurricanes and earthquakes and tsunamis are not people. They relate to the nature of physics and the way the natural world kind of unfolds, if you will.
So how would you put COVID-19 in this? Is this a natural evil? Is this a moral evil? Kind of flesh out how you look at COVID-19 in terms of God, if you will.
Yeah, very good. I look at viruses, talking with people like A.J. Roberts and others who specialize in the field. Only a small percentage, a fraction of viruses are actually dangerous. Viruses are necessary both for plant life, for human life. So most viruses are harmless, but there are some that are obviously, we've seen it, the SARS viruses, they're dangerous and they kill people and they cause economic harm because people can't go out and work. However, I think what is critical in all of that, and this is a point that Reasons to Believe makes about natural evil or natural disasters, is just like with, plate tectonics, there's a trade-off. I mean, mm-hmm. plate tectonics in some ways makes the Earth hospitable, but there's a trade-off. It also allows for earthquakes, and it seems that all natural disasters have that built-in trade-off. They have very positive qualities, but there are also potential dangers.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you bring up. I know you mentioned the plate tectonics, and that's, you talk to most scientists and they realize that that's actually kind of the global thermostat. That's what keeps, in spite of all these dramatic changes happening on Earth, it kind of keeps the Earth within the right temperature range, but it has this tremendous capacity for destruction. And I remember talking with AJ once, or at least reading some of her articles, and she points out that if you don't have viruses, bacteria just overrun the world. You don't get these higher life forms, human and animal life forms. So it's interesting because there's these things that we put in the natural evil category, they actually seem required for our existence to work well. So why would God do these sorts of things?
Well, I think what's interesting in this context is that obviously viruses, plate tectonics, all of these natural things, they allow human life to flourish, and yet they retain these potential dangers. But in retaining those dangers, it also means that human beings have to develop judgment and character. I mean, maybe we shouldn't build all our homes right on the coast where there's an ocean. Maybe we should recognize that viruses have to be handled. And this, of course, then opens the question, does moral evil impact natural evil? And I certainly think it does. I mean, you can be irresponsible in the handling of a virus. These meat markets, that is a potential danger. Or you could have people, who would be negligent in a lab where they could potentially hurt people. So it seems, Jeff, that natural evil is never alone. It's always exacerbated by moral evil.
Yeah, you got two interesting points there, and I think you're right. It seems like a lot of the damage that comes from the natural evil is often related to our choices of how we've chosen to prepare or not prepare for them. But your comment specifically about how in the face of natural evil, we actually have this capacity to develop judgment, it almost seems like God is using that to develop our character, that lacking consequences to our choices or the living in a more dangerous environment, we're not going to develop in the way he would desire for us. Is that a proper way to look at it?
I think that's a powerful point. I mean, if life were just Disneyland all the time, you know, where it's just fun, it's just amusement, there's no potential dangers that could happen, I think clearly God is more interested in the growth of our character than he is in, you know, how happy or amused we are. And therefore, living in a world that has trade-offs means that we have to develop character. We have to grow in our understanding. We have to manage the resources, or to use the image of God analogy, we have to take dominion over nature and exercise wisdom and good judgment.
You know, we tend to look at things like this coronavirus, we look at earthquakes, volcanoes, these things that cause damage as a sign that how could there be a good God out there? But I think Ken made a very powerful point that God is using these things to actually grow us and develop his character. I would encourage you to go check out his blog article. It's called Coronavirus and the Problem of Evil. We'll give you great resources and good understanding of how we can use these difficult and challenging times to point other people to the creator of this universe and how they can know him in a personal way.
That does it for us this week on 2019. We hope this show has helped equip you to share your faith with confidence and compassion.
And don't forget, subscribe to the show and search for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at 2819 Show.
And if you would like the podcast version of our show, you can get that wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just search Reasons to Believe Podcast.
Bye.